I am Lawson Inada, and I've been asked to be interviewed because I'm supposed to be a poet and writer.
All right.
But essentially, we're just up here along the Rogue River on a very beautiful day.
And talking about fly fishing and
talking about
walnuts.
Whatever we want. Yeah,
this is right.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so, welcome to whoever would want to join us here.
Well, Lawson, thank you for doing this. This is great.
Oh, well, thank you for asking me.
And I don't mean to sound too formal there, but it's the way it gets started.
No, thank you for asking me, because as we've been talking, you know, we tend not to ask things of one another beyond the usual, like, how's it going, and this and that.
Yeah.
And then, so, and I'm also, well, being honored to be asked, I feel very humbled, you know, because we could turn the camera around and... anybody else could be on the screen, so to speak. You know what I mean? Because everybody has something to say and share. That's the whole idea.
We all have a story in us.
Yeah.
And writing is a storytelling art.
It is storytelling.
So how did you get started?
How did I get started writing?
Do you remember? Are your earliest memories?
Well, my mom had a degree in teaching, and so... she always encouraged me to read and write. She taught me and how to. She had me recite poetry for my grandparents, who were from Japan, and maybe they couldn't comprehend what I was reciting. You know, like 'Twas the Night Before Christmas or something like that. See? But they would applaud, and so I always felt nurtured and encouraged by the people around me as far as my language skills, which you know, I can't say they were. Any different from anybody else, but I had the sense to be encouraged to express myself, you see. And so, you know, of course I, you know, had little tablets and things at home, and I would write, and but I was just a person who did that, took little notes on myself. And then when I went to college, I was encouraged by teachers. They said, hey, your writing's okay, you know. And so I began to think about it. I was just, you know, a college student without any major, and so I became an English major. And I met a teacher, Phil Levine. He was new to Fresno, so I was at Fresno State. He was new to Fresno, and I was a junior in college, and I took his class. And we became friends, you see. He's now the U.S. Poet Laureate.
Ah.
But at the time, he was the nicest guy, and he was young. He was in his 20s, and I was in my late teens. And so we would get together and talk, and then he had invited me over to his house to just continue talking and listening to jazz and chatting. And I liked the way he was living. It wasn't fancy, but... his wife was a dancer, and she's a very cultured person, and they had a modest house, but a lot of books, a lot of music, you know. And I began to think, boy, he's got something going here, because he can show up to a classroom, and then he comes home, then he writes. And he was writing and publishing poetry in these journals that were in the library, and they were not famous journals or anything, but I said, you know, this appeals to me. Otherwise, I didn't know what I was going to go into. And so, through his advice and encouragement, that's how I became a writer of poetry. Now, as for writing poetry, I get asked about why do I write poetry. And I think, you know, you talk to different writers, and they'll tell you, well, I write novels, so I write, I don't know, what, a science fiction. Right. I write different. And I realize it's a matter of your personality. It's like, why do you play this sport and that, or why do you play this instrument and not that, or something like that. I think it's a matter of just how you are, you know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I have that sort of a discipline that I could sit down every day and work on a novel, you know, which is going to have to be, you know, 500 pages or something
right.
like that. Or with my job, you know, I was able to fit poetry writing into it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and so That turned out to be the genre that I would follow. But at the same time, I guess if I wanted to, I could work in other, you know, other areas as a writer.
Do you remember your first published poem?
Yeah. I remember my first poetry. See, I went to the way Professor Levine taught. He had been to the Poetry Conservatory, let's say, and learned in the classical way of the British tradition of writing. So you had these different forms you followed. And a wonderful thing about it was like music, because poetry used to be sung in the tradition. So if you wrote a sonnet, it was like, you know, in like a 2-4 rhythm. Or, you know, like I realized that one of the forms... rhythms of poetry was called anapestic. 'Twas the night before Christmas went all through the house, or it's like, listen, my children, and that's like a waltz. That's a waltz, 3/4 time, you see what I mean? So I was studying music and trying to play music at the time, so I realized these work together. And so I learned, you know, more of the traditional classical forms at the conservatory. It was wonderful and useful to learn these ways, and then you could work out on your own or do something in another way, kind of like in a freer way, like jazz, you see. So, yeah, I remember my first published poem, because what you did then was you wrote these poems, and then what did you do with them? So a friend of mine told me, he said, "Say, look, you're writing some stuff that's not bad. Let me give you some addresses. You could send them out." So I'm sitting here in a little cafe in Iowa, and he wrote down these addresses, and I went down to the post office and sent the stuff off. And so I got an acceptance letter from a place called the San Francisco Review.
Oh, yeah.
And I was sight unseen, and who was I? And so it really, really made my day, or made my year, to think that somebody wants to publish one of my poems. And it turned out the editor was a fellow named George Hitchcock, who became very well known in poetry circles. He edited a magazine called Kayak out of the San Francisco Santa Cruz area, and he was a wonderful poet himself. And so I met him several times, but that's just how it happens. And actually, I think the real value of writing poetry is, you're expressing yourself to yourself, you know, and then what the paper becomes like a mirror, because you're putting something in that comes out of you that you had forgotten about or you didn't really know was there. And so you got something for yourself, and you could look at it and say, "I'll be darned, yeah, that was in there all the time." And it's not the kind of thing that people ask about, you know, how are you feeling today, or, you know, what did you see today? And so, and then I think where the artistic aspect comes in is, if you want to share this with someone, to read it to someone, or to even get it published by someone, then I think that's where the fine-tuning comes in. You know, I mean, I think that's the way with all arts. It's like, if you're a photographer, you could take a lot of pictures, or filmmaker, you can make some home movies, but for others to be able to relate to it, there's a way that it can be presented where it takes on something beyond just something that you did, you know, to other people. I mean, that's my feeling. And I was thinking about that today, because in poetry, you're working with words, and in poetry, you're working usually in a very short way, you know, maybe about a page or less or something. And so it's like writing a song, composing music. The notes have to be right, you see. And that's one thing that you try to fine-tune, is words. And I was thinking about that today, because when I was going to meet you guys, I was told to meet you at the Rogue River Inn. So I go by this place called the Rogue River Lodge.
And I kept on going. I said, well, the Rogue River Inn must be up here. So it's, you know, like this word was important, but the word really did a wonderful thing for me, because if I were to write a poem about the experience, I would call the poem If It Hadn't Been For, because if it hadn't been for the wrong word, I wouldn't have kept going up the fabulous Rogue River.
Yeah.
The Rogue River Canyon with the river below and the trees in the fall, and it was so beautiful that, you know, I would have been stuck at the Rogue River Lodge, but I kept going. And so I guess the meaning of that I would try to bring out in a poem would be just how circumstances happen in your life, or a mistake can turn out to be perfection, or you know, so that's what you would try. I would try to convey, there's more to that story too, because poetry, to me, allows you to really. Maybe it's like being somebody with a, you know, or sound equipment or something like that. It allows you to really get into the details of life and to sort of like flesh out and fine tune the details, because. Previously, I stopped in a little combination gas station convenience store, and I said, just to make sure, I haven't been here in a while, you know, up the Rogue River, I've got to find out where the Rogue River Inn is. And so I went in there, and a little bell twinkled and tinkled as I went in there, and the woman behind the cash register said, may I help you? I said, yes, excuse me, I want to make sure that I get to the Rogue River Inn, so I don't think I passed it, but Rogue River Inn is, yo no sé, she spoke Spanish, you know what I mean? And so the wonderful thing was, I said, ¿Dónde está Rogue River Inn? You know, I spoke my California Spanish.
Yeah.
And she couldn't tell me where it was, you know. Which was a nice incident, because I thought about it, because how wonderful. Where I was looking for would be maybe more like a tourist place.
Yeah.
Right? Or vacationing people that would stop there and dine and stay at the Rogue River Inn or Lodge. And I loved it because she was not a tourist. You know, I was the tourist then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so from her station in life, you know, why should she know that? You know what I mean? And and then she knew things that I didn't know, see? And so that was...
And both of you had the wrong word to begin with.
We had the wrong word to begin with, yeah. And then... As I drove through that little town of Shady Cove, you see, it's one of those you drive real fast through, or maybe you buy a Coke or something, or buy some gas, I realized, boy, if I was living here in Shady Cove, how would I make a living? And I realized I didn't have skills, I couldn't be a fishing guide, I couldn't work in the forests. I know, I could get a job clerking in a store, which I've done. There's a laundromat there. I said, I could probably work there, because I work in a laundromat. In a laundry, actually. And I could work in a kitchen, you see. And maybe with my education, I could get a job here in Shady Cove teaching in the public schools, maybe. But I realized I didn't have that many skills. You know what I mean? And I don't have computer skills either, you see. So I don't
Well, you have a different set of skills.
I hope I have a different set of skills, you know what I mean? I'm okay as a typist. I learned to type in high school, and I don't use a computer, but I'm okay. I could never be a true typist. And as far as being a so-called writer, my penmanship is kind of like below average.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because in the old days, when you think about writers, that meant having a good penmanship, which people don't have anymore, I guess. But, oh, boy, I realized I couldn't... Well, the other thing is, I was thinking, so all these thoughts would have to do with life, and if it hadn't been for this or that, or if it hadn't been for a teacher I had, or if it hadn't been for my mom, or hadn't been for this and that, and this poem starts to become long, and it becomes like it has many parts to it. Yeah. You see what I mean? Like a series and a sequence of things. Because related to this as being a writer is you got to have a knowledge of something, I would guess, you know, and what I'm saying is, yeah, I have knowledge of certain things, but boy, I don't have a lot of other areas of expertise or job skills. And so in a way, I was fortunate. I backed into my profession, which is not as a professional writer, because poetry is not a commercial thing. You know, yeah. No one makes me sign a contract or edits me or anything. You're just kind of like a free-range a musician. You know, mm-hmm. I guess you're the kind of, you're playing some blues one night, and next night it's some bluegrass, and next night you might be at a wedding. You're playing that the country, and you're doing some rock or something, and so poetry is pretty free range, and so what the poetry allowed me to do was to get some publications and therefore get a job as a teacher, you see. So my real profession has been as a teacher.
Yes,
you see, and it fits right into with writing poetry.
In your early poetry, was there ever one poet that sort of jumped out that really, like, lit up your life or said, broke down the walls or something?
I used to like to read whatever poetry I could, you know, American poetry, the English tradition, but I also became interested in the international poetry, and so I would love to read the Chinese and Japanese poetry in translation. I studied a little bit of German. I love to read Rilke, the poet, and Lorca. You see what I mean? And so I started, it was like music, I guess. I knew this much and that much, and I started branching out and everything. And I could readily relate to two very different kinds of poets, where William Carlos Williams, who wrote in a freer form, and then Robert Lowell, who would write in more of a traditional forms, you see. But there were just a whole bunch. Mm. And, you know, nowadays people might ask me, well, what poets do I like? What, to me, that means what writers do I like, you see. And I like writers who are really teaching me something. So a writer I really appreciate is Chogyam Trungpa, who was also a poet, a good friend of Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac. Hmm. He was a guy my age who was a Tibetan Buddhist Lama who founded Naropa University in Boulder. But he had this tremendous training, spiritual training, and so he was very wise, and I realized... And he could write poetry, too, see? He has a whole book out called First Thought, Best Thought. I think it's edited by Allen Ginsberg, but the idea was, when you're writing, first thought, best thought.
Ah.
You know, like,
yeah.
It's kind of zen, you know? Don't futz around with it. It's like being a calligrapher or a watercolorist, you know what I mean? You kind of do it. Or it's like jazz, you know? Do it. And so, but to me, he knows a lot that I don't know, that I'm still trying to learn. So I really appreciate him as a person, along with his poetry, you see. Mm-hmm. So, you know how you go along in life and you keep learning more and more and more. And as I used to tell my students, you know, you may not know much about poetry, so you think, but you know, everything from nursery rhymes, you know, song lyrics, that's all poetry. You know, passages from the Bible, that's the poetry. You know, Gettysburg Address, it's how you hear it and realize that that's That's the poetry. And then, of course, then we all have the poetry, the poetic spirit, you see. And so, to me, it all works together. So, because one thing I really appreciate and I'm actually very humbled by is the ancient poetry tradition, which was not written, but it was oral, and it would be recited usually by a spiritual leader. So I know in Japan, the Ainu people had a way of reciting poetry, that everybody would come. And then everybody would know what was being recited even, you know, and their mouths would move along with the designated poet. I'm very humbled by that tradition, which I think we could reclaim or recapture, even though we're kind of all going on with the world of entertainment. And what I'm thinking is has to do with the community, society, spirituality, maybe happens around certain observances, you know. So it's not that we're going to have a poetry reading tomorrow night. No, it's going to be to celebrate the solstice, or on the occasion of Robert Burns' birthday, or to observe this and that. We are going to include some poetry, which will be there with music, you know, dance. Everybody's invited. It might be for the Rice Harvest Festival or something. You know what I mean? And so there are all of these things that we used to do where poetry was not a thing necessarily. It was just there, you know, and you had to have it. My uncle was trained to recite poetry in a very ancient traditional way in Japan, and he would be called upon to present that poetry after a funeral, let's say, or after a wedding at a reception. And the way he did it, wow, he had these years of training. He'd be like, and people were going like, ooh, you know?
Yeah.
And I realized, I'm not there yet, you know? Or I have a friend who lives in New Mexico on the Navajo Reservation, you know, and he told me, he said, hey, come down there sometime, you know. I said, oh, what? You want me to give a poetry reading? No, just show up. And, we have meetings on a regular basis, and everybody gets to talk. See, we guard this as the sacred wind. I said, oh. And I realized, well, how funny it would be. I would show up and say, well, folks, I'm going to read this stuff that I wrote 25 years ago, and it's on this piece of paper. You know, like, that's not getting it there. You know what I mean?
All right.
Plus, the real poet might be in the audience, who is the spiritual healer. And the real poet has the real poetry where, you know, if you're ailing, that he's going, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, do this in a certain way. So I love the fact, though, that we're kind of on the cusp of going back to those ways, you know. And the beauty about poetry is that, of course, it's accessible and doable by anybody because, you know, we all started writing when we were about in the first grade. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you got to buy some expensive equipment or take a lot of fancy lessons because, you know, all you got to do is tap the poetic spirit and express that. And
so how do you tap the poetic spirit? How do you
I have a different routine or whatever, but I don't have to write poetry. I can pay some bills in the morning or something like that, but when it comes to me, and so I try to be ready for it, and I don't always carry a big notebook or anything, but I do carry a checkbook. And so I've found that I might be standing in line at a checkout stand and some music is playing and something. I get this fabulous idea, at least I think. And so I write it down in my checkbook. Because it's like an artist who goes around with a sketchbook, you know, and says, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
So, otherwise, for me, it's like a dream. You know, if I don't write it down, it can get lost. And so even when I'm not writing, in a way, I hope I'm appreciating things the way, you know, a painter might or a musician might. Or so poetry has enriched me, even if I didn't write it, by just being more aware. In a way, I was thinking today that, you know, in all humility, I don't have all these skills and gifts and for, like my grandparents for anything. You know what I mean? They could build things and they could make things and fix. They could do all these things. But as a poet, I, you know, I like to think, okay, it's been a gift, it's been a blessing. And I like to share it with others, too, if I may, you know. So I've been asked to present poems at a wedding, you know. I like to write things for a certain occasion. Not to publish and get all fancy about it, but be real, you know. A friend had me write a poem for the grand opening of his store. I'm going to cut a ribbon. Oh, man. Or I was asked to write a poem for my uncle's funeral. You know what I mean? And yeah. So, like, poetry has that place. As I said, it's a in a ceremonial or spiritual way, you see. And for the public, the first poem I had published actually was by our minister. The poetry didn't count because it was published. He put it in his newsletter. You know what I mean? I was in college. He yeah. heard I was writing poetry. He says, I need some space all the time, some filler in my newsletter. Give me a poem.
You did filler.
But I love the feeling of, again, community and reality. And, you know, I've done little poems. And sometimes I just stick them on the refrigerator. To be your own publisher. You know uh-huh. what I mean? To share it with somebody.
Refrigerated publishing.
Refrigerated publishing. Well, that's what you're doing with this project.
Precisely,
you know?
Yeah.
You're just going out there.
Making, you know, brilliant people like yourself available to anybody who wants to listen and can.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
You know, it's just serendipitous.
Yeah, serendipitous or whatever, or just get real about it.
You are always, and in your position as a professor, having to give advice to prospective writers and hopefuls.
Yeah.
What do you tell them? Now, what's the future of writing, do you, for people that want to write?
Well, you know, keep a checkbook or a journal or, you know, keep writing your thoughts down. And nowadays, you know, people have all of these different iPads or whatever. You keep in track of yourself, and this is what you have to work with. And then just keep doing it, because the so-called writer, and I don't think of myself as necessarily writer, or certainly not an artist, or as a teacher, I didn't have a doctorate, but even if I did, I don't know if I'd be a doctor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm just a guy who, you know, I've kept at it, and I've written quite a bit, you know, and that's a difference as far as being a writer goes, is the one who is the writer is the one who writes it,
right.
You see. And as I said, I'm not the kind of writer that could write 800 pages and put that into a novel, but there are a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And in the reality side, there, you could make a living at it, too.
Yeah.
You know, you could be a journalist, or you could write articles, you could write, I don't know what, blogs, you could, you know, so if you stay with it, fine. If that's what you want to do, fine. You know, but there's a lot of options.
Yeah. Yeah.
But poetry is one thing that you could work a job that, you know, we've had famous poets work as physicians, insurance salesmen, or whatever, but you can kind of fit in your poetry.
Yeah.
To your particular lifestyle, you see. So there's, it's continual, and so, yeah, I want to encourage others to let their voices be heard, you know, and yeah, how's it going? What are you thinking about? Sure, we can go on forever, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.